Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today. Oh, 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 oh.
6:02 on a Monday night. Joe Giglio with you. Sports Radio 94 WIP. We've got Tim Kelly behind the glass in for Jack. We got Rob Cherry on the updates. You guys with us. 888-729-9494. That is how you get aboard. We got a lot planned tonight. Process pregame later this hour. Hopefully the Sixers don't drop another game to a team they should beat on the road. They're in Orlando later tonight. Later on, we will talk to Bo Wolf of The Athletic as the NFL owners meetings are going on out in Arizona. Howie Roseman's going to speak at some point. So if Howie has anything interesting to say, we will definitely touch on that as well. Bo covers the Eagles for The Athletic. 9 o'clock, we'll talk to Kevin McAlpin from down in Atlanta. Covers the Braves as we get set and ready. You know, spring training is over now. It is officially over. The Phillies won their last spring training game today on a walk-off home run. Who hit it? Did it? Who they play? None of this matters. What matters is spring training is over now, which means just in a couple days, this thing gets going. And I've realized throughout the day, partly because I was driving in and listening to Ike and John, and then partially because I joined Joe and John in the midday, that Gabe Kapler was a big part of the conversation today here on WIP. And I believe Angelo and company talked a little bit about what would happen if the Phillies don't do well. And if they don't succeed or they don't have, you know, they don't reach the expectations that are out there, which are starting to grow. You know, I just looked at it before the show tonight. The Phillies have tied for the second highest over-under number at Sportsbook in Vegas in the NL. Only the Los Angeles Dodgers have a higher win total projected. So the projections are high for this Phillies team. Our expectations are high. Sports Illustrated picked the Phillies to go to the World Series. There is buzz around this baseball team like there hasn't been in a very long time. With that comes responsibility, and that is going to fall a lot on the manager. So you know what we're going to do tonight? And if you're listening to the show often, and especially last baseball season, you're not going to be surprised I'll bring this subject up. But tonight we're going to have the Gabe Kapler conversation on the evening show. The first one since the end of last season. And now it is a different year, different team, same manager though. It is Gabe Kapler. And I noticed just listening today and listening to the conversation on all three of our shows that I heard at some point today, whether between the midday, the morning, and the afternoon show, there still is a fear, there still is a nervousness, there still is an apprehension around this fan base and Gabe Kapler. And I'll just put it out there to start. I believe Gabe Kapler's a good manager. And I think he did a good job last year. I think when you look back at the team they had last year and the fact that they won 80 games with that roster, I look back and I say, that's a good job. The Phillies did not have a good team last year. They didn't have a roster that should have won many games last year. It was disjointed. And I look at all the little things he did across the way to try to win those games. And was it a lot of tinkering? Yeah. Was it a lot of changes? Yeah. Was it a lack of stability in almost any position outside of maybe three or four? Yes. Was it necessary based on a lack of Major League Baseball players that were good enough to play every day? Yes, I believe that. So as I look at the 2019 Phillies and I start thinking about what they're going to be and how good they can be, here's one thing that I don't worry about. I don't worry about the manager. Gabe Kapler knows what he's doing in the dugout. And I don't sit back as we get this season going and say, oh, I don't know. I'm worried about Gabe Kapler. I wasn't worried about him last year. I'm not worried about him now because I think the Phillies have a good manager. They have a manager that extracted wins from a team last year. I mean, go back and look at some of those box scores last June and July when they were winning. The guys they were winning with, it is close to a miracle that they won as many games as they did with that team. And really, and I'll call myself out on this, we should have seen the collapse coming. Maybe not to the extent it came, but we really should have seen a fall coming. That team was overachieving. They were winning close games. Their run differential was never extraordinary despite having a very good record. They were the kind of team, if you go back and you think about it, they were the kind of team that was destined to come down off that perch. Now, is Gabe Kapler absolved of any blame from last year? No, I don't think he is. I think Gabe Kapler managed well in-game early in the season. I think late in the season when he had extra weapons, you could call them, or extra players to use, he probably went too far. And I also believe this, and I'll criticize Gabe Kapler on this end. If there's one thing I think he needs to work on for this year, and it will come to fruition before this season ends, is I think last year, too often, the team took on his mentality of a lack of a sense of urgency. I thought late in the season, as they got into that tailspin, the players started sounding like him, positive in the face of disaster, positive in the face of, yeah, this thing's crumbling. Everyone knows it's crumbling. We're fine. No big deal. And I thought that was a problem. There has to be a sense of urgency at some point if you're going to be a playoff team, if you're going to avoid the losing streak becoming a tailspin. Last year, they couldn't do that. And I don't want Gabe Kapler to come out this year and start ripping players and just doing things to appease us as fans, because that's silly. Ultimately, wins and losses is what we want, or wins and not losses. But that's what we're going to judge the guy on, not how he talks to a camera after the game, or what he says weekly on Wednesday mornings or whenever they're going to do it with Angelo. I believe Gabe Kapler's a good manager. And as I look at the Phillies, they have a lot of positives. They have a couple of negatives. They're a good team. And I don't worry about this manager. 888-729-9494. We'll start with this. I think it's the most fundamental question, and I think it's one we need to talk about tonight after a full year of watching the guy manage. Do you believe Gabe Kapler is a good manager? No one's talking about great. No one's talking about Hall of Fame. I think you're being ridiculous if you say he's an awful manager. Do you believe he's a good manager? It's a yes or a no question. I believe wholeheartedly he's a good manager. I think he showed you that last year, getting that team to where they got to. It's very easy for us to just percolate and talk about the collapse and what happened and the fact they were 15 games over and they missed the playoffs and blah, 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 and they finished under 500. All those things are very easy to harp on. The pitching changes, the lineup changes, the pinch hitting, playing guys all over the field in different positions, becoming a mad scientist in September where Carlos Santana at third and Justin Bourne first. And I mean, he was just making it up every day as he went along. Roman Quinn batting third. I mean, some of the stuff in September was wacky. But at its core, I believe the guy's a good manager. And I think last year was more of a product of he didn't have enough talent to win, and he was trying to win. And early in the season, he was pushing the right buttons, and it worked. Late in the season, despite having more buttons to push because the 40-man roster in September, it didn't work. 888-729-9494. We are 3 days away from the start of a season with the Phillies that is more anticipated and more exciting than we've had here in a very long time. And the central figures are Bryce Harper, and the central figures are Aaron Nola and Rhys Hoskins and JT Realmuto and some of these big-name players. But the one guy we reacted to all year last year was Gabe Kapler. And as we head into 2019, with the expectation comes pressure on him. Because if he doesn't perform, it's quite clear what's going to happen. Matt Klentak's not going anywhere. Matt Klentak doesn't go after the offseason he just had, after the team he put together. Matt Klentak will go nowhere regardless of what happens with this baseball team. Nowhere. But Gabe Kapler will be on the hot seat. And when I joined John and Joe in the midday today, they asked me if I thought, could Gabe Kapler lose his job if the team doesn't play well this year? I don't believe that will happen, but I will say this. When you think about Gabe Kapler's contract, and it came out just a few weeks ago, I forget which outlet had it, but someone wrote about Gabe Kapler. For the first time, the terms of his contract became public. I never saw it throughout his entire first year. I never saw anything about, was it a five-year deal? Was it a four-year deal? So we got what it is now. Gabe Kapler is managing on a three-year contract, which means we're already 1 year through that. This is year two, which means next year, if the Phillies don't do anything to his contract, leave it alone, Gabe Kapler will go into 2020 as a lame duck. So this is a gigantic year for Gabe Kapler and his status as the Phillies manager for this reason. If he has a good year, the Phillies will extend his contract. There's no reason to send him into his third year as a lame duck. If he doesn't have a good year, his job status is up in the air. I mean, that's the reality of his contract. If he has a great year, he gets a contract extension. If the Phillies go to the playoffs, I would bet he gets a contract extension. if the Phillies don't achieve or they underachieve, or we look at it and say he really held them back, then he could lose his job. That's the kind of pressure on Gabe Kapler for the 2019 season. 888-729-9494. You got to watch this guy for a full year. We got to watch him manage for 162 games last year from opening day, which was, you know, sometimes perception, it becomes reality, and you're the first impression is the one that lasts. I will admit, as a Gabe Kapler fan, the first impression of him last year, not great. Not great at opening day. That sour taste was in everybody's mouth for a long time. Even when the team started to achieve, even when the team started to do well last year, that was there on Gabe Kapler's, you know, just kind of on his resume. That opening day, the first weekend, when he went to the bullpen, there was nobody warming up. All that was there. He proved to be a much better manager than that. He proved to be one that was adept at making moves, at helping the team through games and winning games, especially with the way he runs a bullpen. 888-729-9494. Do you think Gabe Kapler is a good manager? I do, and I don't believe there's any reason to worry heading into 2019. I don't sit here, I've been trying to think for a couple weeks now about this team and how good they could be and really what their ceiling is. At no point in this, if I sat back and said, nope, the manager's going to hold them back. That hasn't happened once for me. So I put a poll up on Twitter tonight before the show. Do you think Gabe Kapler's a good manager? And the reason I worded it like this, is I did it on purpose because a couple years ago, it was early in the 2017 season. I was doing a show, a 10 to 2 shift later at night, and it was very early in the 2017 Eagles season, coming off of Doug Peterson's first season in 2016. And the conversation around Doug at that point was very negative. The conversation around Doug was he didn't know what he was doing. He was in over his head. He wasn't a good manager. He wasn't a good coach. He was going to hold the Eagles back. And I remember thinking that that's just not true. Doug's a good coach. His first year, Doug didn't have the talent. Second year, let's give him some time, but I believe he was going to be a good coach. Now, did I think Doug Peterson would win a Super Bowl in his second year? Absolutely not. I'd be lying if I told you I thought that was going to happen. But I did think Doug was a good coach, and I remember having this same conversation around Doug right around the beginning of his second year. And I said, I think he's a good coach. And a lot of people didn't think so. And obviously, Doug won everybody over. Gabe has a long way to win everybody over. I don't expect him to win you over yet, fully. But after watching this guy manage for a full year, do you believe Gabe Kapler's a good manager? And we'll talk about the worry that he presents in this 2019 season. I'm not worried about Gabe. I think we'll get the most out of this team. 888-729-9494. 68%, I'm surprised actually, 68% on Twitter right now saying yes, Gabe is a good manager. Let's go to the phone lines here. Kat in Sicklesville. What's up, Kat?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How you doing, man?
Doing great. I really do not think there's any problem with Gabe Kapler's managing experience. The Santana situation is a little blemish with the busting of the TVs, but aside from that, there's really nothing to worry about with him. He's a great, engaging guy, young and exciting to me. I have no problem with him.
You know, I think he's going to prove. I think he's going to prove a lot this year. He has a better roster now. They have a better team. They have a team that's capable of winning. And I think finally now we could judge him, because last year that team just wasn't good.
Nah. You know, we got. I mean, obviously the Harper signing makes it 10 times more exciting. You know, and Harper actually likes. He likes our manager. So I think that just makes it that much better this season.
You know what? I think that what you just mentioned there, Kat, and I appreciate the phone call. What he just mentioned there is critical to this whole thing. You think about Bryce Harper. He has a 13-year contract. 13 years. And when you have a 13-year deal, you are going to be here longer than anybody else. Like, you think about Bryce Harper right now, 13 years means he's going to outlast almost everybody in this organization, probably outside the owner. 13 years from now, is Matt Klentak still here? I don't know. Probably not. Now, he may be. You know, if they win World Series, sometimes GMs can last 20, 25 years in a spot. But the odds are Matt Klentak won't be here. Will Gabe Kapler be here in 13 years? Almost surely not. You can almost count on one hand managers you've seen stay in one spot that long in the last 25 years. It's very, very rare to see that. So the reason I say Bryce Harper is so important for Gabe Kapler, not just because he's good, not because he's going to make the team better, not just because he's going to help Gabe Kapler win games, because he's got to be, Gabe has to have him on his side. If you think about the relationship that emerged between Bryce Harper and John Middleton, all the stories we heard around, you know, the recruitment of Bryce Harper and the signing of Bryce Harper and the dinners with Middleton and his wife out in Las Vegas, already you're seeing a bond forming between John Middleton and Bryce Harper. So when you think about Gabe Kapler, he's got to keep, of all these guys, he's got to keep Bryce Harper on his good side. Because that's the last thing he needs, is to have Bryce Harper not liking him. Because that's the quickest way out of town. Forget what I say. Forget what any of us here at WIP say about Gabe Kapler and whether we like him or we love him or hate him. If Bryce Harper likes him, if Bryce Harper respects him, Bryce Harper wants to play for him, he's going to be around. 888-729-9494. So I got a tweet here from, oh, look who it is. Angry Al. Well, I heard him on the afternoon show today. Said, you keep forgetting the operative phrase in your whole argument, I believe. A lot of people don't believe he's a good manager, so we're all going to find out. Well, I believe he is. And I think the first year he showed he can manage. As I look at the 2019 Phillies, I see pitfalls, I see reasons for worry, the starting pitching staff, maybe some depth in the bullpen, how healthy they're going to stay. All these things are question marks. Now, they're going to be good, but they're question marks on how great this team could be, how young they still are. I don't question if the manager's going to hold them back. If there's one thing I need him to improve on, there's one thing I need him to just take a step forward with, it's this. Last year, I thought he was way too laid back, and the team became way too laid back last year. As the losses mounted late in the season, it felt like there was no sense of urgency. That, and I think that was a reflection on him. It was a reflection on him and the way he managed and the way he talked. They kind of took on his personality with that. And I think in some ways early in the season and over a long, that's a good thing. You want that over the long season. You don't want to be pressing all the time. So I think that part is good. But at the end, at some point, a sense of urgency has to emerge. And for the Phillies last year, it never seemed to emerge. That's my concern about him. My concern isn't his bullpen usage, how he writes a lineup card. I think he's fine with all that stuff. In fact, I think he's really good with a lot of it. I think when you look back and you look back at some of the ways they won last year and how they won early in the season, he was pushing all the right buttons. He was willing them to victories early on. The moves he made, the bullpen usage. When you look back at a team that had very, very few impact players and the fact that they could at any point be 15 games over 500, that's the sign of a manager who's getting the most out of his roster. And really, as fans, that's all we could ask for. As an organization, that's all you can ask for. Having someone who gets the most out of the roster. Doesn't drag it down. Doesn't get less out of what they are. Gets more out of what they are. 888-729-9494, #9494, on your AT&T and Verizon wireless cell phones. Last year, on this show, it felt like there were two factions when we went to the phone lines. You were either a Gabe guy, you were with me, and you believed in Gabe Kapler as a good manager, or you were anti-Kapler, and you thought he was a problem with last year's team. That his lineup usage, his defensive switches, everything he did seemingly was a problem last year. The 2019 Phillies are ready to go. Thursday is the home opener. Thursday is the opener. Do you believe in Gabe Kapler? 888-729-9494, #9494. We'll come back. Your phone calls, and I'll give you something I think Kapler needs to work on. Hopefully he did. And we'll start seeing it probably Thursday afternoon. We'll come back, your call. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Now, though, we have to go out to the guest line here and bring on Bo Wolf of The Athletic, who will talk to us about the Eagles, which is why we usually bring Bo on. But we also have talked to Bo about his brush with greatness, the time that he went head-to-head with a guy who eventually struck out David Ortiz. Bo Wolf of The Athletic joins us. Bo, what's going on, man?
How are you, Joe?
I'm doing well, and I thought tonight, you know, the owners' meetings are going on, and Howie's talking out there, Doug tomorrow. I thought it'd be a good night to talk Eagles, but then I read your piece on The Athletic this morning with your brush up against Josh Zide, who was at one point a Phillies farmhand, and I noticed in there you wrote about your prowess as a pitcher, and tonight, Bo, Jack isn't here. Jack's off tonight, and I'm glad you could come on and talk about this without him here, because he wouldn't like to hear this, but you threw harder than Jack.
Well, you know, I did have a catch with Jack before his big debut on the mound last summer to try to get him buttered up. And, you know, I'm a little older, so my arm is not quite what it used to be. So I think Jack was throwing a little harder than me that day. But, you know, back in the day, I could if I was going, you know, max effort, I could pump it up to, 83 or 84.
Not bad. And you went head to head with Josh. So, Bo, tell us quickly about the story. I read it today at The Athletic. It's a fun one. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but then I was hooked for a while reading this thing. So tell us about, like, where did this story come from? Why did you go out to Arizona to talk to a guy you went head to head with in high school that eventually became a big league pitcher?
So there's a site-wide package on childhood nemesis, right? And everybody sort of has a story of the guy who was like the best player they ever played against when they were growing up playing either, when they were younger or in high school. And for me, that guy was Josh Zide, who was a huge phenom, high school pitching prospect at the time. Baseball America ranked him as the top player in the Northeast, and he was in my conference, and we went head-to-head on the mound once and played each other twice a year. And so I had sort of like tangentially from afar sort of followed his career, and he's had this very interesting winding career. You know, he ended up going to Vanderbilt as part of the number one recruiting class, and then he was off the team within 2 years because he just fell so far down the depth chart. Then he goes to Tulane, becomes a 10th round draft pick of the Phillies. He's sort of an afterthought, and then he works his way up to sort of prospect status, and then he gets included in the Hunter Pence trade, and he has this very winding career. He ends up making it to the major leagues. He has this really fantastic moment in the WBC for Team Israel. So I went out there to talk to him about his winding career, and you can read that on theathletic.com/Philly. It's I'm grateful to him for opening up about his story, and it was a fun ride.
So, Bo, let me guess here. A couple years ago, when I was doing writing full-time for NJ.com before I started doing this show, I went and covered a Yankee game right after Todd Frazier got traded to the Yankees from the White Sox. And he's, I guess, Todd Frazier would be my Josh Zide if I was okay. You in your shoes. And
did you get to play against him?
I played against Todd. He struck me out 3 times and hit a home run to win a tournament in Ocean County, New Jersey. Let me guess.
Was this during the Toms River Little League World Series or after that?
So it was after. So this was high school. So we're the same age. Maybe we were 4 years older, 4 years removed from, or 3 years removed from Todd doing all that. So he was pretty famous locally at that point. I remember
those teams very well. Joey Franceschini.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Toms River was damn good. I played in a school in Toms River. We played against each other. Let me guess. Did Josh have the same reaction to you the way Todd did to me, which was he didn't remember any of this?
Well, Josh remembered, playing our team. He remembered, what the field was like.
Did he remember you?
He certainly did not remember.
Yeah, I had the same experience.
Yeah, which is totally fair. I mean, as I say in the story, the guy played, pitched in, 400 professional games, and that doesn't even include the games when he was just sitting in the bullpen. There's no reason for him to remember the guy who, went to extra innings against him one time and was throwing, high 70s, low 80s. When he was this big league phenom as a high schooler, but he was very generous with his time, and it was fun. Yeah, it was him. It was him and Pedro Alvarez was the other guy who ended my high school career. He beat us in a playoff game my senior year. So those are my two future major league opponents.
Pretty good ones. Bo Wolf of The Athletic joining us here. Check the story out at The Athletic. A really good one by Bo about Josh Zide and his experience there. All right, Bo, Howie's out in Arizona. So is Doug Peterson. The NFL owners meetings, Jeff Lurie, we're going to hear from all of them. The one thing that's coming out tonight, and I'm sure you have some thoughts on this one way or the other, but Howie Roseman tonight, just some of the quotes emerging, seems like he's alluding to the idea that a Carson Wentz contract extension could actually happen this offseason. At one point, I thought, no way. And then recently, I said, well, they haven't done a lot. There's still a lot of cap room. Maybe they're just going to get this thing done now. How have your thoughts evolved on a potential Wentz extension over the past couple months?
You know, coming into the offseason, and I think you, I, and Steele had talked about this, I sort of thought that the Eagles might have some bargaining advantage if they wanted to do the contract extension with Carson Wentz this year. I mean, they're going to do it eventually, right? And so you might get a better price if you do it now because Carson Wentz is coming off two injured seasons, and obviously maybe he would feel like it's in his best interest to lock up the money long-term as opposed to waiting until next offseason, whereas he could just bet on himself, and if he has a great season, he'll get more money than he would this offseason. At the same time, looking at the moves the Eagles have made this offseason, I'm not so sure if that's what's going to happen. Now, I know Howie just, minutes ago said that's something that they might be working on. But if you look at the moves that they've made this offseason, a lot of them sort of read to me as, let's push our chips into the table one more shot with this group of guys before we have to pay Carson and make some other difficult long-term decisions on who is going to be on this roster and who is not. And I specifically think about not making a decision on Nelson Agholor right now, keeping him on the roster with a one-year deal for $9 million. Bringing back Jason Peters for one more year. DeSean Jackson is an older player, and I think he fits the offense perfectly, as we've talked about, but that's not a long-term move. That's a short-term move. So I think if you sort of look at the picture of what the Eagles have done so far, I would be a little bit surprised if they do the Carson Wentz extension right now, but they have the cap space to do it. Howie is as good as and probably the best in the league at maneuvering the cap space, so it's certainly possible. And I do think that, as I said, they have a little bit of a reason to want to do it now as opposed to waiting until next offseason.
Yeah, that advantage that you said, the bargaining advantage, is the only reason I'd feel good about it. Now, here's my position on it, Bo. I just want another year of information on what Carson actually is as an NFL quarterback. He's obviously shown the ability to play at an MVP level. Then he fell back after an injury. He's had injuries. Like, if they're going to pay him, I just wonder if the number's going to come down and he'll be paid like a top five quarterback, like a top 10 quarterback, because those numbers, as we see every year when it comes to salary structure in the NFL, it matters. And how much you pay your quarterback affects everything else. And I don't feel comfortable right now, based on everything, just paying him like a top five quarterback in the league.
Well, the thing is, there's a couple of things. One is, I would kind of want to get the deal done before the Cowboys do the Dak deal, because Dak Prescott is not nowhere near as good a player as Carson Wentz, and the Cowboys are going to probably pay him a ton of money. And so if that deal is done, and then all of a sudden you have to beat that deal for Carson Wentz, it could get even more expensive. So I think there's a little bit of an incentive to beat the Cowboys to the table when it comes to these extensions. But the problem is, even if you wait and you say, okay, maybe Carson wasn't as good this year as we thought, but we're still going to sign him long-term, there's the scenarios in which the Eagles wouldn't commit to Carson Wentz long-term are so hard to envision that even if they wait and he's just okay, I don't think they're going to end up saving a ton of money if they just wait until next offseason as opposed to doing it now. So the marriage here, Foles is gone. The Eagles are pretty much married to Carson Wentz, whether he's actually signed yet long-term or not. So I don't think that they need to wait to see how he does next year.
Bo Wolf, The Athletic, joining us here, talking some Eagles as the owners' meeting is going on out in Phoenix. Bo, what has been, you kind of touched on a little bit around the Cars thing, but what has been your overall thought on what they've done in free agency? So far, no running back has arrived, which has surprised a lot of us. I'm sure they'll add something at some point, but nothing yet. And my question I have so far is, they've added good players. I think DeSean could still play. Malik Jackson's a good player. I just wonder about all the age they've put on this roster. How he's gone out in the past and spent on middle-aged free agents, and they've had good runs here. Brandon Brooks has been one recently. McLeod has been a good one. Jenkins was a good one. This year so far, they've got a lot of guys between the age of, let's say, 29 and 32. What have you thought about what they've done in free agency?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't love signing old guys either, but to be fair, he also did have success with Chris Long and Patrick Robinson. Yep. And those guys who were a little bit older. And they were a little bit less expensive. And I think that's probably how you would view DeSean Jackson. Malik Jackson's a little bit younger, so I think he sort of fits a little bit more towards the McLeod end of the spectrum, obviously not quite as much money. But I think what we have learned this offseason is that Howie Roseman is, like, super committed to the comp pick formula. Malik Jackson doesn't count against it. DeSean Jackson doesn't count against it. The Eagles have Nick Foles signed to a big deal elsewhere. Golden Tate, Jordan Hicks, all these guys, they're due right now to probably get a third-round pick and maybe two fourth-round picks next the 2020 draft. So I think we have learned that Howie has really started to take that seriously and try to game that system. But I think I am a little bit surprised they haven't added a running back yet, but not super surprised. I mean, you look at the most successful season the Eagles have had, they didn't have a running back until after the draft. Then they signed, they draft Donnell Pumphrey. They sign LeGarrette Blount after the draft, and then they trade for J.J. in the middle of the season. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, but I'm a little bit surprised that they haven't made a move there. I would obviously expect them to draft somebody in the middle rounds and then probably sign someone after the draft as well.
Last one for you here, Bo. I know you're staunchly against this. The Eagles have typically been staunchly against this, but based on the team they have, which is going to be a good one, they're going to be a team that's projected to make the playoffs. They've done some things here where they filled holes. They don't have the one glaring hole except running back heading into the draft. Would you give it any chance 10%, 5%, 15%, that if Josh Jacobs is there at 25 and they like Josh Jacobs, that they would actually take a running back in the first round?
So you're right. I am, you know, adamantly opposed to drafting a running back in the first round, and I think that Howie Roseman is too. But I would give it about a, you know, a 15% if he's there. And I think that if you're going to ever draft a running back in the first round, it has to be somebody who is young. It has to be somebody who doesn't have a ton of tread on the tires, you know, who wasn't overworked in college. And it has to be somebody who can be a factor in the passing game. And Josh Jacobs does pass all those tests, so that is good. But I still find it hard to believe that, knowing how committed Howie Roseman is to building up the lines of scrimmage, you know, focusing on spending money and capital on the most important positions on the roster, offensive line, defensive line, quarterback, wide receivers. I think it would be a big surprise to me if they did that. But if there is going to be somebody who they, you know, break that mold for, I think Josh Jacobs makes a little bit of sense. His testing numbers at the Alabama Pro Day were not very good. He ran, I think, a 40 in the 4.6s, which is not ideal, obviously, and that may mean that he does fall to the Eagles at 25. But I still find it hard to believe, but if you're going to tell me that it's going to happen, then I guess Josh Jacobs is a better bet than somebody else.
Yeah, for the first time, I'm starting to think at least there's a possibility as every day goes by and they don't have a running back on this roster. Bo, I really appreciate you hopping on. Really enjoyed the story at The Athletic, and we'll do this again soon. All right, tonight, our final Clearwater check-in of the, really, the spring training, as the Phillies are coming home. And this is, I guess, doesn't even count as a Clearwater check-in, but we'll call it that anyway. We're going to bring on Kevin McAlpin, 680 The Fan. He's a local guy. He's a Temple guy. He covers the Braves down in Atlanta. And the Braves, of course, coming in here Thursday for the home opener, which should be a great NL East race this year. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. And look, we're excited here for this season. We're excited for the Phillies to be back. But you got to do this a year ago. You got to be ahead of us in the rebuilding of the NL East teams that were down for a while. The Braves won this division last year. Kevin, it feels like everything this offseason has been about everyone but the Braves. What's the feeling around this team?
Well, I think they're looking at what they accomplished last year and kind of banking on some of the guys they have that you know made big strides in 2018. They're kind of counting on them to make even more strides in 2019. And I'm talking about, you know, guys like Dansby Swanson and Johan Camargo and Ozzie Albies. I would say Ronald Acuna Jr., but I don't know how much better he can get coming off the year that he had last season. Obviously, the National League's Rookie of the Year, and deservedly so. So I think, you know, they're looking at guys like that to kind of take the next step. Obviously, they add Josh Donaldson, which should help them from the right side, power from the right side that they did not have last season. So I think that, you know, bringing back Brian McCann, it's a feel-good story. Nick Markakis is coming off a tremendous year a year ago. It's a young pitching staff. It's a young and inexperienced pitching staff, but they feel like, you know, the guys they have internally were better than some of the external options, and I'm talking about some of those high-priced free agents that were out there on the market this offseason. So kind of banking on themselves. They know the division has gotten better, but they feel like they've gotten better as well.
Kevin, what did you make of the way the Braves decided to spend their money this offseason, which was really early on, giving a one-year, I believe, $23 million deal to Josh Donaldson, who, when he's right, and when he was right a few years ago, he's an MVP-caliber player. He's been banged up a lot. I don't know how much he's going to play this year, how great he's going to be before he gets hurt again. If he's great, it's a big, big addition. If he's not, it feels like the Braves spent almost all of their budget on one player that's a risk.
Yeah, no, it is, and you're right. And for a team that has a similar payroll to what they had to start last season, I think there's some fans here in Atlanta that are a little disappointed. They wanted to see more moves made this offseason. But, you know, again, they're not in the business of being in the long-term deals like a Bryce Harper, like a Manny Machado. They're not in that category right now. So, you know, look, yeah, they did spend a lot of money, but they feel like Donaldson, he has the same general manager he had in Toronto in Alex Anthopoulos. He has the same training staff that had kept him on the field through that MVP season in 2015. They're kind of banking on him being healthy, and he has been healthy. He was eased into spring training. This guy only knows one speed, and it's 100 miles an hour. The last couple of spring trainings, he's kind of overdone it too early on. So the Braves wanted to protect him against himself for not going out there and overdoing it in the first, you know, first or second week of camp. So they kind of eased him along. But you're right. They did spend the majority of the money they spent this offseason on Donaldson. You know, they bring back Nick Markakis on a tremendous bargain. He just got done a four-year, $44 million contract. So he is a bargain. They only spent a couple million dollars on Brian McCann. I think if you're a Braves fan, the way you need to look at it right now is they did get better from an offensive standpoint. They also, I think, have held some money back where if it comes to the trade deadline, they're in this thing. They've got money to spend at the deadline where they could take on the salary of somebody that they might not necessarily have been able to do in years past. And I'm throwing a name out there like a Madison Bumgarner. In years past, there's no way they could have absorbed a contract like that at the trade deadline. But I think what you're seeing them do now is reserve some resources so they could make a splash at the deadline, a player or two maybe that could help put them over the top when all is said and done.
Kevin McAlpin's joining us here, 680 The Fan down in Atlanta. Covers the Braves as we get set for opening day. Phillies Braves, 305 right here on WIP on Thursday afternoon. And Kevin, I feel like everything I've read the past couple days, weeks, previews, predictions of this division, and really of the NL in total, I see a lot of Braves fourth, Braves third, behind the Phillies, behind the Nationals. Has that crept in? Are the Braves thinking or talking about this at all, that they won this division last year? They're the team that won 90 games. They played in October. And yet I'm seeing very, very few people think they're going to do it again.
Yeah, I think they're kind of, I don't want to say it's bulletin board material, but to a man, everyone I've asked about that in the clubhouse has said, look, no one picked us last year either, and we won 90 games. So, you know, they're a team that has not got a lot of love nationally. I think you're looking at a lot of folks saying they should be 84, 85 wins. Well, the interesting thing about that is if they're an 85, 86 win team this year, that could be enough to at least keep them close in the division. And the reason I say that is because we know how much better the Phillies and the Nationals and the Mets are. But this is not a division that's going to be, you know, a 96 win team is going to win it. I really think upper 80s to low 90s, just given the fact that you have four teams that are going to beat up on each other for 6 months. I do think that, you know, a lower win total is going to come out on top of this division. But, you know, again, I think as it's constructed right now, I think middle of the pack somewhere is fair. The Nationals pitching staff, they obviously add Patrick Corbin. That's a huge addition. The Phillies, obviously with Bryce Harper, is huge. The Mets, can they stay healthy? You know, who knows? Can that rotation, can those guys all make 30, 32 starts a year? We'll see how it all plays out. But, you know, I think that the mid-80s is pretty fair for the Braves as they're currently constructed. And again, like I said, there could be a situation where, you know, come mid to late July, they do go out and make a big-time splash and helps put them over the top.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, especially with the way this division is. I think it's a race to 90, and if anyone actually gets over 90, they probably win this division. So every game's going to count here, including this weekend coming up in Philadelphia. And Kevin, I noticed the first three starters and the rotation is out for the Braves. They're bringing a couple rookies north to start this thing. Are we going to see a thing with the Braves this year where it's almost like the Dodgers, where we don't look at it as a five-man rotation, but a bunch of guys, maybe six through eight or nine, get starts for this team this year, considering all their depth?
Yeah, I think that's a really fair way of looking at it. You know, the Braves are going to start Julio Teheran. It's his sixth consecutive opening day. And if you had told me 6 weeks ago when I got to Orlando for spring training that Julio Teheran would start on opening day, I would have told you you're crazy. It just looked like that run was coming to an end. Obviously, the injury to Mike Foltynewicz is the main reason why Julio's out there. But as far as Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright are concerned, two guys that don't have much on the back of their baseball card. But what they do have is a really strong mentality when they're on the mound. And I love what we've seen from both these guys. They're out there, they're throwing strikes, first and foremost. That's what you want to see from young pitchers. But they're going out there, and they have all told me, look, if I'm going to get beat, I'd rather get beat on a home run than going out there and walking four or five guys on a start. So they've got the really, you know, sharp young guys. And, yeah, I do think as far as how many we'll see throughout the season, they're going to try to mix and match by days, extra days in between starts for guys and shuttle guys up and down from the minors. They have so many guys that are optionable this year that you can afford that luxury of saying, hey, look, we want to give Sean Newcomb an extra day in between starts because we saw his ERA is 2.5 points lower when they give him an extra day as opposed to keeping him on regular rest. So I think between Tuki Toussaint, Bryce Wilson, Max Fried, Mike Soroka, those are all names that Philly fans will see throughout the course of this season. You might not see all of them here in April, but between now and the end of September, you're going to hear of all of these guys, and they're all really, really impressive young arms.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth there, which certainly helps over 162 games. Kevin McAlpin joining us here, 680 The Fan down Atlanta. We get ready for the Braves and Phillies opening day Thursday and the weekend series here, including a Sunday night game between these teams on ESPN. Kevin, you mentioned money. You mentioned the Braves maybe saved a little bit in case the trade deadline comes around. They might want a big-time starting pitching arm. How about that bullpen, Kevin? I thought last year at the end, early September, I thought the Braves were going to fall. It turned out the Phillies fell worse, but I thought that bullpen was an Achilles heel for them. They really didn't go out there and address it in a big way. Craig Kimbrel, the ex-Brave, still a free agent. Do you think there's any chance that Craig Kimbrel finds his way back to Atlanta?
Well, that's been the hot button topic. Believe me when I tell you on Sports Talk Radio down here in Atlanta. When is he going to come back? Why haven't they signed him? Matter of fact, it's funny you mention that because Kimbrel on two different occasions was spotted in the airport in Orlando. So everyone set Braves Twitter on fire. Hey, he's here. Well, he was there to play golf and go to the Daytona 500. So that had nothing to do with anything with the Braves. I think there's a chance, but I think if there is a reunion between Craig and the Braves, he's going to have to come down on years. They just don't want to go out there and give him 5 years or 6 years, whatever he's asking right now. I think if that comes down to, if they can say, look, we'll give you three and an option, or maybe it's even two and a heavy two with an option, then maybe I think he considers that. But it sounds like right now, from some folks I've talked to, Craig's kind of willing to sit this thing out. And, you know, I don't know if he's banking on a team losing somebody in a high leverage situation. Maybe it's a spot where, you know, he says, look, I'll sit out till June if it means whoever signs me doesn't lose a draft pick. I think there's a lot of factors in play, but if I'm Craig, I can't be very happy with my agent right now because he's one of the best arms on the market. He's been one of the biggest names on the market all offseason, and he still hasn't found a home yet. So I wouldn't completely rule it out. Again, the longer he stays out there, I think there's a better chance he could return to Atlanta, and that would certainly be a welcome sign for a bullpen. Like you said, there's a lot of young, inexperienced arms down there, and a couple of veterans that they do have. Darren O'Day has a sore elbow, and A.J. Minter has a sore shoulder. They're going to get Minter back here probably in the next week to 10 days. But, yeah, there's some guys that are going to have to hold the fort down there that may not be necessarily used to those high-leverage spots. So, again, I think the asking price, the years are going to have to come down if the Braves are going to get back into that conversation.
Kevin, I always think with young players, especially young great players, we get really excited to see them. We enjoy them in that first year, and then as sports fans, we move on to the next big thing. And I think everyone in baseball now wants to watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or whatever rookie's going to take the stage this year. But man, a full year Ronald Acuña Jr. could just, it's a game changer. And I'm one of those people, Kevin, that thinks the Braves are going to finish third or fourth in this division. They take a little step back. But Acuña is the one guy that's given me pause on that, because if he takes an extra leap this year, we're talking about a 21-year-old that could win an MVP award. How good is he watching him every day?
He's incredible. I mean, he really is. And you're right. A full season with him, and he's going to be hitting cleanup, at least to start the year, because he was so good in those run-producing situations last year. The Braves are going to say, look, here's Freddie Freeman, here's your protection. You got it in Ronald Acuña. And he was never overmatched in any of those situations. I think the Grand Slam in the playoffs against Walker Buehler shows that he's certainly up to those type of, you know, really big moments. So a full year of him, he's a special player. It's funny, I was watching him take batting practice a few days ago down at the complex at Disney. And one of the Braves coaches turned to me after Acuña was clearing the scoreboard. And I know it's only BP, but the power, the raw power he has, he just looked at me and said, I can't take any credit for that. That's all God right there. He's a special player, and you can see why the Braves didn't want to part with him a year ago in those talks about JT Realmuto. You can see why any conversation that started with Ronald Acuña Jr., the phone was hung up rather quickly. And I'll tell you this much, for as good as Acuña is, there's another good young outfielder the Braves have coming up. We could see him next year in 2020, Christian Pache. Defensively, I think he's even better than Ronald Acuña. Bat still has a little work to be done. But the Braves are now already envisioning an outfield, potentially with Acuña, Inciarte, and Pache to start 2020. Three legitimate gold glovers in the outfield. So it's crazy to think that as good as Acuña is, there's a guy that's equally as talented waiting in the wings in the minors. And again, he could be here within a year.
The talent in this division is just off the charts. Last one for Kevin McAlpin down at 680 The Fan in Atlanta, talking Phillies, Braves. We get ready for the opening series. The Braves won it last year, won 90 games. The Phillies were 10 games back. The Nationals underachieved. They finished in second, and the Mets were in fourth. And I'm going to exclude the Marlins from this. But, Kevin, I think 1-4, it's the best division in baseball. I could see all four of these teams going 85 or more, wherever it's going to land. How would you stack them up right now, the top four teams in this division, as we head into the season?
You know, I think if the Mets can stay healthy, and that's a big if the rotation can stay healthy, I think that's a really, really – I mean, you're going to struggle to score runs against that team. So if they can stay healthy, I could see the Mets being a team that could win the division. I think it's still hard to get past the Nationals, in my opinion, though. when you had that rotation that was already as good as it was, and now you throw Patrick Corbin in the mix, I mean, good luck. I mean, even without Bryce Harper, you know, that with Soto and with, you know, obviously with Zimmerman and Rendon, I mean, that lineup top to bottom is stacked. Dozier, I think, is a good fit for them as well. So, yeah, well, you can exclude the Marlins, but I'll tell you what, it's going to be important when you play the Marlins. You're going to have to beat up on the Marlins because that's your lone layup here in this division, and even they have some good young arms. So I'll say either the Mets or the Nationals, probably the team to beat, and then I think the Phillies, you know, look, if I'm the Phillies, I'm still a little concerned. I don't know if they have enough starting pitching. I like their bullpen, but, you know, after Nola and Arrieta, it kind of gets a little dicey there. So I think the Phillies and the Braves will kind of compete for the, you know, the middle of the pack there. I can certainly see that playing itself out. But again, look, all of these teams, I wouldn't rule any of them out for making a big move come the trade deadline, trying to put themselves over the top. So it's going to be a fun division to follow. I'm looking forward to it. Heck, the Braves haven't played a nationally televised game on ESPN in like 3 or 4 years, and they have 3 of the first 4 weeks. So that just goes to show you how much intrigue's in this division all of a sudden.
Yeah, the NL East is back. Kevin, I really appreciate a few minutes here. Enjoy the last couple of days of spring training, and we'll see you in Philly soon.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.